In New York, John Bonet prepared this report.
Aboard the Staten Island ferry, Rich Orlando, who's lived on Staten Island all his 22 years, is commuting to his clerical job at a securities house in Manhattan. He thinks the rest of New York City looks down upon Staten Island.
I know for a fact, working with people, none of them living in Staten Island, that they think of us as a dump. It's a big dump with some houses. They view us, you know, as nothing. You know, we have no input or, you know, real value to the city itself. So in a way, I think it would be better if we went on our own.
The feeling that the island is, in Rich Orlando's words, little more than a dump, is nothing new. It dates back at least to the 1940s, when New York decided to put its garbage on the island at the Freshkills landfill. As well, the island's geographic isolation accentuates feelings of separation from the rest of the city. The only mainland connections are four bridges to Brooklyn and New Jersey, and the ferry to Manhattan. But most of all, Staten Island is a demographically different place from the rest of New York. Whites make up 80% of Staten Island's population, while New York City is only 43% white. And the percentage of households making more than $100,000 is second only to Manhattan.
Because you have a population where 70% of the people own their own homes, and you've got the best educated workforce, this is already an economic powerhouse.
Mark Mascaro, president of the island's Chamber of Commerce, thinks the island has substantial economic power.
It's just that it's quiet. And relative to the engine that Manhattan is, it may seem small. But make no mistake, this is a community with substantial economic clout.
But the local economy is also why some Staten Islanders question the secession movement. Many worry about the future of business on the island, and they want to know if the island can run itself without raising taxes. If islanders vote in the new city charter on November 2nd, it will only be the first step on the long road to secession. The issue would then go on to the state legislature to be put into law, so exact details of local government are likely years down the road, and residents would have to keep paying New York City taxes until secession became a reality. Whether the island could support itself under a localized government is still an open question. Some studies indicate that secession wouldn't mean huge tax increases for residents because politicians could reinvent local government and cut costs to fit the island's needs. But David Goldfarb, a Manhattan lawyer and island resident, is skeptical. Last year, he founded Staten Islanders for a Unified New York to oppose the secession. He says city workers and senior citizens, among others, may be forced to leave the island if taxes go beyond what they can afford.
I think it's naive to think that we're going to not have to pay more for our services and the taxes are going to go up. Whether those taxes would be apportioned between an income tax and a property tax, no one knows.
While the referendum has a decent chance of passage, Staten Island Borough President Guy Molinari, a former congressman for the island, predicts a lot of flack from New York City when the issue hits the state legislature. Molinari himself only endorsed the referendum on October 13th after holding out for 6 years. He says secession is an issue on which Staten Islanders will fight fiercely.
This is not an amicable divorce. We're not sitting down at a table with the other four boroughs and where we're negotiating terms of settlement. The city is saying, we don't want you to secede, and we're saying, we don't care what you want. We want to make that decision ourselves.
And it's just that sort of attitude that may let the rest of New York know, regardless of the outcome, that from now on, Staten Islanders plan to get the respect they say they deserve. For National Public Radio, this is John Bonet in New York.